Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. Here's the podcast for Connecting Faith. Enjoy the conversation.
Real conversations about how we live out our faith every day. Welcome to Connecting Faith.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender. So great to have you here today. It's Friday, which brings a smile to my face. Hopefully it does for you as well. But sometimes we go through some things that we're not necessarily bringing smiles to our faces. Maybe you've gone through something like that in this past year, a time of trial or suffering that forced you to ask some tough questions about both God and yourself. Like maybe you ask, is God real? Is God really good? Does he care about me? Well, my guest for today asked some of those questions and many more as she endured a battle with cancer, not just once, but several times, experiencing so many surgeries and treatments over the past year that she has begun to question her own beliefs about God and herself. My guest for today is Michelle Cochette. As a professional speaker and consultant who lost most of her tongue to cancer, but has found the strength to both write and speak about that in her new book, I Am, A 60-Day Journey to Knowing Who You Are Because of Who He Is. In this book, she shares about the complicated intersections of real faith and real life. She speaks at women's conferences like Compassion International as well, Focus on the Family and Hearts at Home. She and her husband have been married for 16 years. They share a stepfamily of three boys, and more recently, they've added three small children. Just as they thought they were preparing to enter that empty nest phase of life. A lot of changes for Michelle just in the last couple of years. They live in Denver, Colorado. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Thank you, Joe. It's so good to be here with you.
Well, I saw that beautiful picture of your family, and yes, there were multiple children there. So tell me about that and how you decided to add three when you're supposed to be resting easy.
Oh, my goodness. You're just diving right into the deep end of the pool right away. I love that. Yes, I have six children, and the oldest three are boys, and we had survived all those years of parenting and adolescence, and we were looking forward to the emptiness phase. In other words, my husband and I decided to give it a new name. We called it the Promised Land. And we were about ready to embrace that with both hands when we got a phone call from someone who let us know about a woman who had three small children that she could no longer care for due to some struggles that she had personally with addiction. She could not be a mom. And so the question was asked of us, will you take them? And so you can imagine what kind of decision that was and what a huge implications it had for our family. But honestly, it took us less than 24 hours for us to pack up our car and go and pick up twin 4-year-olds and a 5-year-old and begin parenting all over again.
Mm. Well, tell me about like what kind of blessings they brought not only to the two of you, but to your older three boys as well.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I mean, it's been massive transition for our entire family, as you can imagine, going from, you know, three kids to six. And as far as blessings, I think one of the biggest ones for all of us is learning once again that family transcends biological ties. And God put us together in families in all different ways, shapes, and forms. And family is more about how we do life together than about our biology together. And that's been a really beautiful thing to see how God has redeemed so many different losses by bringing our very unusual family together. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, with that comes, of course, multiple challenges as well. But I think that's part of the redemption story as well, right? Only those things that are broken need redeeming. And so, you know, we have this God that's all about redemption, and he's all about finding the things that seem impossible and making something possible out of it. And so it's been a really difficult and beautiful experience of the gospel in a new way through this blending together of our unusual family.
Well, you know, a couple of years ago, you had written a book called Undone is Beautiful. And I was reading that book and then read very soon after that that you had been diagnosed with cancer for, I think, your third time.
Yes.
And that seemed so serendipitous that here you had just finished this book and now you had become a little undone. So to say it lightly, so tell me about that process of finishing that book, of getting that next diagnosis, and then what's been happening in the last couple of years?
Yes, I finished writing the book after the first diagnosis with cancer and after we took those three children into our family. And so the initial writing of the book, Undone, was me trying to make peace with this life that didn't look quite like I thought it would. You know, here I was, a cancer survivor for the first time. I now had six children that were, you know, individuals, complicated individuals, just like we all are. And so, you know, I wrote that book just in my efforts to try to make peace with this very unexpected life, not knowing that once the book was done, I would be diagnosed with cancer for a second and then a third time. And so, you know, it was so interesting. In fact, the third diagnosis came just a few months before the book released. And so on the day the book came out, I was far too sick to even get out of bed. I literally slept through the entire launch of my first book, and which was completely the opposite of what any first-time author dreams of. You know, it's supposed to be this big, huge event that you get to celebrate. You work so hard. And yet here I found myself in literally the most undone place I've ever been while my book Undone is finally hitting the shelves. And it was a very introspective day and several months following the release of that book as I had to realize on an entirely new level my dependency on God, and that any good that he brought out of that book would literally have to come from his hand because I couldn't do a thing about it.
Well, and that's why as I read this new book, I Am, it really seemed like this confirmation as if you were almost creating these signs across it. I'm just visioning signs across your room saying, you know, this is who God is. And I know this because of what I've been through. And it seemed like such a confirmation of really what you'd written in Undone, except now you were kind of revisiting that in a new way.
Yes, definitely a new way. Because what happened was, you know, I wrote Undone before. I wrote Undone as more of a status of my internal self, you know, working through questions about faith and life and family and all of that. But I Am was written after that very undone life took a physical toll. So now I am physically different. I speak different. I look different. Cancer has so altered me, so dramatically altered me, that now I'm having to come to terms with the with this kind of undoneness that's on the outside of me. And we live in a culture that, as much as we want to deny it, our culture very much bases a person's value on their appearance, their contributions, their ability to work hard and achieve some kind of success. And here I found myself after cancer for the third time with very little ability to contribute to my world. I mean, I could barely function, let alone do anything of some kind of worldly worth. And so that really started to expose in me how I had unwittingly built my sense of identity around very temporal things. You know, as someone who was raised in the church and had known Jesus my whole life, I knew how to give the right answer. If somebody asked me where my identity was based, I'd say, oh, my identity is in Christ. I mean, that rolls off the tongue really nicely, right? But the reality of what that looks like living out day after day is much more difficult. And what I discovered when cancer caused me to look and sound and function so differently is that I had, in fact, built my sense of worth on what I could do, on what I could contribute, on my goodness, on my abilities, on my talents. And God showed me very clearly that if you can lose it, it's not who you are, that you and I were never meant to build an identity. We were simply meant to receive it. Our identity has already been given and established. We simply have to receive it. And that's great news for us because no matter what happens, we can't lose our value because it's based in who he is, not who we are.
Well, and when you make a career, or your career is about kind of being in front of people, being heard, creating an impression, sometimes people get this impression that, well, you look like you have it all together. How has this experience of, losing your ability to speak the way that you used to, you said you don't look the same, you don't feel the same inside or out. How has that changed as that impression to think that you have it all together maybe has been blown apart?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you said that so well. Well, a couple of things. First of all, I now can't hide my brokenness anymore. I think we all become very skilled at times at minimizing the parts of us that we don't want people to see. We are very adept at picking and choosing what we want the world to know about us, and we're good at hiding that. And now, unfortunately, I can't hide it anymore. And in some ways, it's a very exposing thing. In another way, it's extremely freeing, because what I have discovered on this identity journey is that part of knowing who we really are is embracing both the good and the bad about ourselves. You know, embracing the fact that we are saved, we are rescued, we are found by God, we are loved by God, but also embracing the fact that we're sinful, we're broken, we're proud, we're weak, and all of those different aspects about who we are. When we can own all of it in the light of God's grace and redemption, that's when we're finally truly free to be ourselves. And so, in a strange way, I now carry on the outside of me what we all carry on the inside, and that's just our broken, fallible, mortal flesh that needs to be redeemed by an eternal God.
What kind of reactions have you received that you really didn't anticipate in this new state that you live life in?
Well, I've received, of course, lots of kind, wonderful, just gracious responses. But at the same time, I've also received criticism. I've received pushback from people who don't want to listen to somebody who has a lisp. We have a hard time. We have a hard time getting close to people who are different than us. People that reveal to us that life is not perfect. And so there are those people who don't want to listen to somebody speak who sounds different. I have a number of people, in fact, almost every time I do a speaking event anywhere, I have at least one person, if not a half dozen or more, people come up to me that want to offer me cures to fixing myself. We have such a desperate need to fix everything that's broken. And so people will not listen to the message of what God's trying to speak. Instead, they just see something that needs to be fixed. And so they desperately want to come up to me and let me know how to cure myself and make myself whole again. And I find all of that very fascinating about the human condition, right? That we are so uncomfortable with any kind of discomfort that our first inclination is to resolve it. And yet I have found that pain and suffering, discomfort has become one of the greatest gifts in my life.
Well, we're going to talk a little bit more about pain and suffering and that word comfort, really, as we come back. We have to take a quick break, but I'm talking with Michelle Cushat today about her book, I Am, A 60-Day Journey to Knowing Who You Are Because of Who He Is. We do have a few of Michelle's books to give away. Thanks to her and her publisher for just that gracious donation for our listeners. You can give us a call at 877-933-2484 to put your name on a list. We'll do a drawing at the end of the show. That's 877-933-2484. We'll be right back with Michelle Cushat. Welcome back to Connecting Faith. I'm Joe Bender, and pleased to be speaking with Michelle Cushat today about her book, I Am, A 60-Day Journey to Knowing Who You Are Because of Who He Is. Michelle, after going through cancer diagnosis, several surgeries, radiation, chemotherapy, multiple times, I'm guessing there are many times when you've felt like you were very uncomfortable, to say the least. And I think one of the chapters or the devotionals you wrote in your book, it says, "I am comforted." And I just, knowing your story, as I was reading through that, I just wondered, how has being in this daily physical discomfort kind of help you to understand what God means when he says that he can comfort us, that the Holy Spirit is our comforter? What does that mean to you as you're experiencing pain and suffering?
Oh, goodness. Well, it means everything. I think we typically equate the presence of pain with the absence of God, right? That when we feel pain and suffering, our inclination is to immediately assume that because we're in pain, that God has abandoned us, that we're alone. And that actually just furthers the pain. That makes the pain unbearable. I think we as humans can endure just about anything as long as we know we're not alone. And so knowing the reality of God's presence with us is absolutely essential to our ability to endure horrific circumstances and pain and suffering. And so this is so incredibly critical. And part of that, though, is our understanding of what comfort looks like. So when I was going through my treatment and recovery, the kind of pain that accompanies a head and neck cancer in treatment is pretty significant. In fact, many of the health professionals I talked to said, you know, head and neck cancer patients, their pain is just off the charts. It's beyond what most people can comprehend. So we're not talking just a day of discomfort. We're talking months and months of 24-hour-a-day pain. And so it's significant. This was a very tough part of my journey, daily praying for relief and comfort while I was enduring this ongoing pain. And so God literally had to kind of change how I viewed comfort. So we tend to view comfort as delivering ease, right, making us feel better. So if I said that I'm going to go change into clothes that are more comfortable, it's all about ease, you know, having a release from discomfort and being completely at ease. But the original meaning of the word comfort never had to do with ease. In fact, it comes from the Latin, and I'll say this wrong, but comfortare, which has the word fort in it, and it means to strengthen or to build up in the midst of suffering so you can endure it. It didn't have to do with alleviating pain, but giving you the fortitude to bear up under it. And so I started to realize that part of God's presence, not always was he going to make my life comfortable and take away all my pain, but somehow his presence with me in that would give me the strength to bear up under it. It's literally, you know, what we see with Christ in the Garden of Gethsemane when he's on his face before God. And thank heavens God didn't take his suffering away, because his suffering was a means to our salvation. God didn't alleviate his suffering, but God was with Jesus in the garden, as helping him bear up under the calling that he had to give his life for all of mankind. And so in my places of suffering, I spent a lot of time hanging out at the cross and hanging out with Jesus in his suffering, and finding the closeness of him and the nearness of him right there in those painful moments to give me the strength to bear up under what I was needing to go through.
Mm-hmm. Well, in fact, you're so transparent in just the way that you are communicating with God. And I'm sure that was a daily ritual for you, just being able to communicate in a way that maybe only he and you would understand. I circled a portion of one of your journal entries that you printed in your book. It says, "God, it's tough coming to terms with this new me. I miss my old life, the healthy and strong version of me. What are you up to? How will you use this? I need to know or see that there's greater good and purpose. Otherwise, it's just an endless sense of loss and meaningless." You know, how did you find that he would answer those prayers so that you would know he was listening?
In very surprising and beautiful ways, very ordinary ways. I think we sometimes look for God to send a sky filled with fireworks, right? We want some big show, some big display that where he shows himself. But what I have come to discover is the way that God has given me opportunities in places like coffee shops with the barista, who is in a place of grief and suffering herself. And because of my story, I have this strange ability to connect with a stranger in about 30 seconds because of our mutual places of pain. You know, it's beautiful how perfection does nothing to create opportunities for connection, but pain and suffering and our struggles create almost instant camaraderie with other people, almost instant. And it's been amazing to me the number of strangers that I've had encounters with in random everyday places where we get to exchange stories, and I see God's ability to shine light and encouragement on a life simply because of my pain. Mm. And every time he does that, it redeems a little bit of what's been lost. Mm.
You know, you talk about perfectionism, and it is just so easy, especially for women, to kind of get pulled into that race toward perfectionism, our desire to prove our worthiness, mm-hmm. as if that's necessary mm-hmm. somehow. How have you wrestled with that?
Well, goodness, perfectionism is I think it's probably in my DNA, so I'm going to have an ongoing struggle with that for probably the rest of my life.
Isn't that funny? Because you think that once you're done with middle school, that that's somehow going to go away. And yet I find even as I enter middle age, it doesn't. It just takes different forms.
It does. It takes different forms. And, you know, I think I will always be self-critical. I will always be somewhat driven. I've also discovered that there are some gifts that come with that as well, right? But just like anything, you know, it must be crucified to self in order for it to be of any good. So you know, God's daily working on the perfectionism with me. But again, I think part of this whole I Am book, what makes it so different is that the 60 different chapters in this book, 60 different devotions, embrace both the positive and the negative about who we are. It embraces our human sinfulness as much as our savedness. Okay, if that's not a word, but you know what I'm saying. It embraces both of those. And when we are able to equally embrace our weakness as well as the strength that we have in Christ, we don't have to try so hard to prove anything anymore. You know, it all goes back to who God is and the fact that he chose us while we were yet sinners, while we were yet broken. And once we fully start to live in that reality, that God sees us in our broken state, in our weak and proud and messed up scenario, and he says, I still choose her because I love her. Mm. It's about his character, not ours. When that starts to really take hold, this identity, this kind of whole view of who we are takes hold, then it frees us up to not have to work so hard to prove anything anymore. Mm-hmm. I think that's what's given me the freedom to be so authentic about my own journey is I have nothing to fear from the approval or lack thereof from man because I already have the full love and affection of God.
Well, I'm just blessed to be able to talk to Michelle Cochette today about her book, her devotional called I Am, A 60-Day Journey to Knowing Who You Are Because of Who He Is. We'll be back with Michelle in just a couple of minutes. We do have a few books of hers to give away. We'd love to get that into your hands. Give us a call, 877-933-2484. And we'll be right back on Connecting Faith. To Connecting Faith, I'm Joe Bender. Just thankful to have you here today. We are just tackling some difficult subjects of just knowing our identity in Christ. And I can't tell you for how many people that subject seems to come up. Just people seem to be weary and worn out, whether it's for circumstances that they can control or circumstances they can't. And my guest for today has asked some of those questions of God, like, are you in control? And of course, has heard a resounding yes. My guest for today is Michelle Cochette. She's a professional speaker. She's a writer, a consultant, who has lost most of her tongue to cancer, had most of it rebuilt. I'll let you tell that story, Michelle. She's also found the strength to both write and speak in her new book, I Am, A 60-Day Journey to Knowing Who You Are Because of Who He Is. You know, Michelle, even as you open your book, you just talk about how we can understand our identity by knowing the story of creation and who God has made us to be, what that says about Him. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah, you know, you know the value of a piece of art many times. You attribute the value of a piece of art based on who the artist is. And, you know, there's, I talk in the beginning of I Am about Van Gogh's Starry Night, and it's worth something like $100 million or something. I can't even remember how much, but it's just worth so much because he's an artist, a genius, who knew what he was doing. And yet we forget so many times that we were created as well. We were created by the master artist who was somehow able to create this beautiful planet with billions of people who are all completely unique and different and individual. It's mind-blowing to consider it. And yet we work so hard to try to be conformed to everybody else. I mean, you think of styles and fashions and haircuts and appearance and plastic surgery and everything else and the vast amounts of money that's spent on that. And we're working so hard to be different than who we are. But gosh, if somebody took Van Gogh's Starry Night and tried to throw different paint on it to make it like something else, it would completely ruin the value of this one-of-a-kind work of art. And so what would happen if you and I started to see ourselves in that light and started to see that our uniqueness, our differences, whatever, actually communicated something about the artist, the creator who made us?
Mm. Well, and it seems like it sometimes takes a little bit more work than usual for me to remember that. What is it about just our human frailty that continues to produce this doubt in our lives about who we are?
Well, this is from the beginning of time. This is from, you know, go back to the Garden of Eden with Adam and Eve, where, you know, they were taunted by Satan to be like God. That was an identity issue, right? So this whole taunt about being more than who they already were. So this is going to be something that we struggle with forever. And the reason we struggle with it, I think, is because we have set our sights too low. Just this morning, I was reading a modern classic called Knowing God by J.I. Packer. It's one of my favorite books. It's quickly becoming one that I go to again and again. And I read this quote: "What makes life worthwhile is having a big enough objective, something which catches our imagination and lays hold of our allegiance. And this the Christian has in a way that no other person has. For what higher, more exalted, and more compelling goal can there be than to know God?" And I think as Christians, we forget that that is the only objective that is big enough to anchor our life. And so when it comes to this identity thing, we make the objective our appearance, our talents, our roles, our relationships, all those very temporal things. And it's not a big enough objective, which is why we're constantly losing our footing. You know, we're losing our ground. And like Packer says, that if we want to have a life that's worthwhile, we need to have a big enough objective. And the only objective big enough is God Himself, knowing Him.
You know, just I'm just amazed at how you've been able to anchor yourself on what you say is something other than ourselves, to be able to continually look at God and who He is, and that kind of defines who we are. But it seems like your perspective has changed drastically. Like it's just a blessing almost. And I hate to say that, but it seems like your perspective has changed and has grown this idea of who God is. How can you just encourage people if they are in that period of maybe suffering or feel like they've been lost or forgotten to maybe change their perspective, to look at God and then themselves a little bit differently?
Oh, yeah. Well, I want to, first of all, just normalize the fact that, you know, God has brought about some wonderful transformation in my heart, but it has been a daily and often momentary struggle. It's been minute by minute struggling, wrestling with my faith, digging through the Bible, and God's very faithful work. So, you know, it's easy to look at the transformation years and years down the road and it looks easy. It's not been. It's been years of pain and suffering and difficulty that somehow in God's grace, He's produced some kind of progress or goodness from it. That's what he can only do. So the person who's suffering right now, you know, it's so hard to only see your pain where you are, but just to, you know, at least from someone who's been there in that place of pain all the time, I can tell you that God is so faithful. Your pain will not be wasted. We so much want to wish our pain away, and yet the pain and suffering ends up becoming a profound school that will anchor your faith and deepen your faith and give more meaning to life than anything you've ever experienced before. And if all you can do is just sit back and rest in God's faithfulness, guess what? That's the best thing you can do. Rest in his faithfulness. You don't have to do anything, but trust that the God who loves you will see it through.
That's just so encouraging words, Michelle, especially coming from you. You know, as I look at the opportunities that you have in career, whether it's writing or speaking, tell me how your career has changed or your perspective of what it might be going forward in light of how your physical life has changed.
Mm-hmm. Well, from purely a physical standpoint, I don't have the capacity that I had before. So, you know, I just don't have the energy. I can't work as many hours as I used to work. And so there's definitely some limits there. And obviously my speech is different, so I don't think I'll be doing any regular radio programs anytime soon unless people really enjoy listening to a list. But what I have found is God is changing my perspective on what ministry looks like. It does not always need to be on big platforms with thousands of people. Sometimes ministry is just about, many times, it's just about the interactions with the stranger on the street. And so I'm trying very hard to have my eyes open to the reality of God's activity right here today, exactly where I am, and be faithful in whatever capacity I can work right here and now. And so sometimes that's speaking in audiences with thousands of people, and sometimes that's having a life-changing conversation with a guy who drove me from the airport. And both of them are equally as beautiful.
It's almost like there's been this leveling, if you will, where this group of people who you may have been able to relate with at one time, maybe you relate with a completely different group now. Mm-hmm. And that's just amazing in God's provision.
Yes, I mean, it truly is. And I, not to minimize the pain, but this has been, there are days I've told my husband many times that I feel like one of the most blessed women alive, because somehow God in his mercy saw fit to give me a glimpse of what he's doing. And that is tremendous. That is such a tremendous gift. And even though I'd never wish this on somebody, I wouldn't give away this gift for anything.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Michelle, we're just so glad that you have just found a way and found the strength to continue in doing this valuable work. Just your words are so encouraging, and I hope that people will pick up your book, I Am, so that they can be encouraged as well. You know, we only have about a minute and a half left. If you would just pray for those who are listening who are maybe in a time of suffering as well, I would so appreciate that.
Oh, I would love to. Oh, Father God, our great God, who has given us more than we could ever imagine or ask for, God, we just come to you on our knees before you right now, humbly, saying that there are so many men and women and children right now, God, that are completely broken. They have nothing left. And in their pain and suffering, God, they fear that you have abandoned them. And so, God, I ask in your great mercy that you would reassure them of your reality and your presence and your activity and your affection for them right now, God, exactly where they are. I pray that you speak your love over them, surround them, bathe them in it, God, so that they would know without a shadow of a doubt that you could not love them any more than you already do. And then, God, I pray, this is what I pray so much right here, for these men and women and children, God, that you would establish their faith somehow in this place of pain and suffering, God, that you would establish their faith so that it would be unshakable regardless of their circumstances, and that somehow, by a miracle, God, that they would have great joy in spite of their suffering because they know you. In the name of Jesus, amen.
Michelle, thank you so much again just for joining us. And if you're listening or you just caught a portion of the show, you can go back and listen to the podcast on our website at myfaithradio.com. Just click on Connecting Faith. We'll have more information about Michelle on our website, so we'll connect you to her website as well. And Michelle, just thanks so much for speaking out of both your pain and your strength. I think all of us will be able to see a clearer picture of who God is because of you.
Thank you, Joa. Such a gift, Joa, to be with you.
You too. Blessings on your day. We'll be right back on Connecting Faith.
Not because of who I am, but because of what you've done. Not because of what I've done, but because of who.
Such a beautiful song. It just captures the ideas that we were talking about today with Michelle Cachette about who we are because of who he is, that sometimes we get wrapped up in our inadequacies instead of looking to the one who is not only adequate but sufficient for all of us. I had another conversation earlier this year with Jess Connolly. She's the founder of Amen Paper Company and the co-founder of what's called the Influence Network. She wrote a book called Wild and Free, just on also the subject of identity and women who feel that they might be too much or not enough.
Sometimes we, as Christ followers, have this perception that we choose this life with Christ, and we think that that's it, that that's the one time that he has come into our lives, that he's kind of turned things around, and that we should be good to go now for the rest of our lives. And then when we come into this point where we're like, wait a minute, I'm not performing or thoughts that I should be thinking, or maybe I'm still engaging in some sinful behavior, but he's already fixed me. And so what am I supposed to do with that?
Yeah, exactly. I thought I wasn't a sinner anymore. And you know, we're not. We're children of God by identity and who we've been made to be. And we're no longer daughters of wrath. We're daughters of the King, who is still sin. And who still need grace. We talk about that a lot in relation to being in relationship and being in community. And we find that's one of the quickest ways we see this crop up as an issue, is that we enter into relationship, let's say it's marriage or friendship or even relationship with our children, and after we become believers, there isn't this very present feeling when we enter in a relationship where we look at one another and say, you are going to mess up, and I know you're going to mess up, and I'm going to forgive you. We kind of present our best foot forward and come together as believers, and we do this in the church and in relationship, and say, like, this is who I am, and it's great, and God's good, without really owning up to the fact that, like, I'm still struggling. I am really still finding my footing here on earth. I am really still figuring out who I am as a daughter, and that is actually, if I'm very honest, going to affect you. Mm-hmm. It's going to mean that occasionally I hurt you. It's going to mean maybe that occasionally I don't even hurt you by accident, but I hurt you because I mean to, because I'm a sinner. And I'm going to grow, and I'm going to be compelled to change by God's grace. But I'm going to ask that you recognize that I need the gospel, and I'm going to give you the grace too. Mm-hmm. The phrase we throw around a lot is, you know, almost not being surprised by our need for Jesus, that we shouldn't be surprised by our need for Jesus, that we shouldn't be surprised that other people in our life still need Jesus and still need him to grow and change. And that would really help a lot of us. We felt free in our present to know I'm still working here. The Lord is still working on me here.
Well, and you write about how we do give that cursory, good. How are things? Good. How are you? Good.
Yeah.
And that maybe it would be a little more healing or much more honest with ourselves if we would simply look at that question on a daily basis and say, well, how good am I really doing, and how can God help me in that?
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. I say death to the good. Death to being using good, but good. I say mine is typically what I used to say. I feel like I've been a lot more cautious about it since writing the book, because obviously if you're going to lead women in something, you should try to do it yourself. But mine was always, you know, good, busy, but good. I think that rolled off my tongue. Good, busy, but good. What does that even mean? I'm good, busy, but good. That doesn't mean anything.
Well, so then it requires a little bit more conversation, at least.
It does. Yeah, it does. And a little bit more honesty and a little bit more grace. And it also requires that we listen back and hear when people are willing to tell us, like, oh, you know, I'm actually not great today. I'm pretty discouraged. Okay, tell me more about that, you know.
Jess, you do write about just this need to kind of play life a little bit safe sometimes, that when we're confronted with something that makes us uncomfortable, we'd rather shrink back than kind of go forward. Talk a little bit more about that and maybe how that's been an issue in your life.
Absolutely. I noticed a few years ago, I would say specifically when my kids were really young, I mean, they're still fairly young, but when they were 3, 2, and 1 or 4, 3, and 2, I noticed this like kind of burning question in the back of my heart where I think a lot of women feel. I just kind of felt like, what is this all for? What is this all for? What are we doing here? And I've always been a little bit of an existential thinker. My mom always jokes and says, I'm the girl who, like, if I look in the mirror too long, I'll start to like question all of existence. But I would just really wonder, like, what are we doing here? I mean, I know the Lord started all this, but what are we doing? What are we getting after? And I'm doing the same thing day in and day out. I'm changing diapers and I'm taking out the trash and I'm doing the dishes and I'm putting food on the table and I'm meeting friends for coffee and I'm getting groceries and I'm putting them up and I'm writing emails and doing it again and again and again. And is anything changing? Is anything shifting? And I noticed, honestly, that I realized I was in a season where taking care of other people is a big part of my job, and that it can be world-changing and it can be life-changing, you know, to speak life over my children and my home. And that is ministry, and that is good. But I noticed a lot of my life was made up not even of that small hidden ministry, but of maintenance. Of trying to keep my life tidy and clean and put together. And by that, I mean things like lots of dry cleaning or, you know, reorganizing the toys constantly or the 3 times a day that I would reset my kids' shoes up because it bothered me when they were all over the floor. And those are small examples, but our lives are really made up of a lot of maintenance. And I think especially here in America, if we're honest and we kind of look at our schedule and look at our days, we'll find there's a lot of maintenance. There's a lot that we do just to keep things going that isn't necessarily shifting anything. And so I just kind of started asking, Lord, what is this about? And, you know, how do I do this with joy? And how do I do this with you in mind? And I realized that I could kind of see a clear divide. I could see things that I did that were maintenance that really served the way I administered to people. For example, making meals. We have to eat 3 times a day, apparently. I always joke, I don't know why my kids are always wanting to eat 3 times a day. I feel like, I actually just fed you 4 hours ago. Why are we talking again about another meal? But apparently that's a thing. We're supposed to eat 3 times a day. So we do that. But you know what? That serves this bigger thing. It keeps my children alive. And that feels important. I want to love them. I believe they're going to change the world in their own special way. And so, okay, I'll feed them lunch. That makes sense. But then I found all these other parts of my life that were really about keeping us safe and tidy and keeping our lives very, very secure. They weren't really impacting the kingdom. And they weren't really making anything better. They weren't bringing life to us, but they were keeping us safe and they were keeping us in a shell. And that's my suburban mom experience. But I found that women across America have things that they're doing that are really just keeping them secure, whether that's things that they're doing just to make people like them or things that they're doing just to keep their job. Or things that they're doing to secure some kind of notoriety within society, but they're really not sure why it matters. Why am I doing this? Why does it matter? Do I care about this? Is this important to me? Is this blessing the Lord? Is it changing the kingdom? Is it shifting anything in the spiritual? And I just started to really ask myself honestly, do I want to get to the end of this life really tidy? Is that going to be the goal of my life, to have done 60 or 70 or 80 years and done it in a really organized fashion. Mm-hmm. To have eaten the three meals a day and kept the shoes very tidy and stayed on the schedule and, you know, done what I thought was expected of me wherever I was at to the best of my ability. Or do I want to put my eyes on the Lord and ask him, what do you want to do with this life? And I'll hold my hands up to you, and I'll hold these hours up to you, and these children up to you, and our house, and all of our dollars, and say, the aim of my life is not going to be to be tidy and safe. The aim of my life is going to be to give you glory. And so that's a scary question. That's a frightening question. But I've found that it's not even that life looks wildly different, but I feel a lot of freedom to listen to the Lord rather than to listen to this structure of safety and organized tidiness that seemed set out for me.
You know, one of the subjects that you write a lot about, obviously, because you are a mom and also feel very much, is these expectations that other moms seem to put on each other. In fact, you speak to the fact that women in our culture kind of live under this heavy burden, and sometimes it's ourselves, but sometimes it's others. How do you resist those unrealistic expectations that are set by other women, unfortunately, and just remain free to be who God has asked you specifically to be?
That is the number one question. How do you do that? Here is how I personally do it. I recognize that there are a lot of expectations, and the reality is that there are a lot of humans, specifically women, who may seem to be judging the way one mom or another is living her life or just fulfilling God's call in her life. And I really just try to take a step back and say, you know what, we're all just trying to figure this out. And I think a lot of times when we put expectations on other people, it's because we want some kind of footing for ourselves. And I have been there before. I always tell women, I feel like I've been every type of mom, and I've only been a mom for 9 years. I've been a working mom. I've been a stay-at-home mom. I've been a kind of working mom. I've been a strict mom. I've been a really lax mom. I've been like the natural foods mom, and I've been the McDonald's mom. I feel like I've been all of them. And depending on what community I was in, I just tried to fit the mold. How are other women acting? That's how I want to act. But that's exhausting, mm-hmm. and that's exhausting for anyone trying to fit into those molds. And so I'd say 2 or 3 years ago, I just realized it was after a recent move, and I just kind of said, like, no, I can't do it. I cannot do it. I cannot change again. And that left me with kind of a void of not knowing, where do I fit? Who am I supposed to be? What kind of flavor of a mom and a woman am I? And the only place I knew to go was to the Lord and say, you tell me who I'm supposed to be. You tell me the kind of woman you've made me to be. You tell me the kind of mom that you've made me to be, and I'll do that. And that's what I would encourage women to do, to shake your head a little bit and say, you know what, if somebody's putting some expectations on me, it's probably not about me, it's probably about them, because this is hard and there's this constant struggle. And honestly, I think the best way we can fight it is living wild and free. Is looking to the Lord and saying, who did you make me to be? And what do you want me to do? And how do you want me to do it? I will do it. And it not only kind of proves the point of, it's just hard to argue with anyone else who says, like, I'm listening to the Lord about who he wants me to be. I'm reading his word. I'm getting wise counsel. And this is who he's calling me to be. It's hard to argue with that. So that kind of like settles that one bit of anyone putting expectations on you. But other than that, what we talk about in the book a lot is really the idea that when we live wild and free, it calls other women to do it as well. They want to do that. They want to abandon the expectations and the cultural burdens that we've put on one another. And they then want to live wild and free. They want to put down the expectations that they're putting on other people and the ones that other people have been putting on them as well.
Well, that was just a great conversation, both of our conversations today. If you want to hear more about our talk with Michelle Cashatt, you can just head to myfaithradio.com, click on Connecting Faith. You can listen to a podcast of any of our programs that way. I also encourage you to check out our 5th Annual Faith Writers Contest, accepting submissions right now. For more information on that, you can visit myfaithradio.com. Write, or the picture will pop up as soon as you get on our website, and you can click on that. We'd love to get your entry, fiction or nonfiction submissions. The winner will win a chance to receive registration to the Northwestern Christian Writers Conference coming up this summer.
Thanks for listening to this Connecting Faith podcast. These conversations are available because of listener support, and you can make a gift right now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of Connecting Faith, you can subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend and growing the awareness and impact of Connecting Faith.